That was not a Stanley cup, was that?
Oh, God, no. It's a Yeti. I am not in style. Okay. No, no, no.
Ready? One, two, three.
Hey, Carol, another lovely review. And I quote, came across D a few weeks ago on IG and began the podcast, and it is truly wonderful. Both women are a delight. I've learned so much, and I'm going back to listen to all the old podcasts, and it has made each day brighter.
Oh, that is so nice. Some of those early podcasts, geez, D.
I know, I'm a bit concerned. Who knows what we sounded like on those before we knew what we were doing.
So, not that we really always know what we're doing today, but in those early days, I am sure those would be cringeworthy if we listened to them.
Well, you know what we're doing today? We're going to start a new episode. I'll kick it off. Welcome to the Garden Angelus, where we talk about flowers, veggies, and all the best dirt. And boy, do we have a good show for you today. I'm Dee Nash from Guthrie, Oklahoma, where I garden an acre and a half out of 7.5 acres out in the country.
And I'm Carol Michael from Indianapolis, Indiana. I have a suburban garden measured in square feet. It's about a third of an acre.
We call ourselves Garden Angelus because we are evangelists for gardening. We love gardening, and we want you to love it too.
Yes, we do. And we aren't afraid to spill the beans and tell all of our gardening secrets, the good, the bad, and even the ugly. But that's enough of who, what, when, where. Let's move on to this week's episode. Hello, Dee.
Hello, Carol. Tell me about your garden.
Oh, gosh. It got cold again this past week. So, yeah. I mean, down in the upper 20s in the early morning. But I did get my peas sown out in the garden. I did it actually on Tuesday the 19th instead of Sunday the 17th. Because on the 17th, I was at the Indiana Flower and Patio Show. And I got to give a shout out. I met Abby from Abby's Plant Parties. She does these really cute terrarium parties for like everybody from 5 years old to 95 years old. We'll put a link to her in our show notes. Also picked up a couple packets of seeds that I quote unquote needed. So
sure you did.
And then my nephew texted me about his garden. I think his wife said, text Aunt Carol. He said, what should we cover? And I looked around my yard and it's like, I don't cover anything.
I don't anymore either.
And I said, plants are pretty tough, you know, make sure they're well watered and everything, you know. So, and then,
you know, I figure as long as I don't plant anything that is out of season.
Exactly.
Like a zinnia would be out of season right now, even here. As long as I don't do that, I don't cover anything anymore because it is so hard to do. Usually the wind is blowing. I did it. I don't see that it made a lot of difference over the years, so I just don't.
Well, and if I could digress further, it's like I told him, the whole point of covering is to let radiant heat from the ground come up. It'll raise the temperature a few degrees. If you're going down to 26, 27, that few degrees is going to raise it to 29, 30. It's still freezing. Plants are pretty tough and resilient. Plus the covering itself, if you use plastic, that is way bad. You have to use like cloth. And so then you're emptying out your linen closet and you got to make sure ground is covered. You don't tie that tree up like a lollipop. That'll do absolutely nothing. But anyway.
Mm-mm. No, because you need that heat to come from the ground. And I know a few people who used to use lights back when lights were warm.
They're not warm anymore.
But most of our lights are LED now, so you can't even do that. So, you know what? I say just don't plant out stuff you shouldn't plant out yet. I see people going with tomatoes, and I'm like, not yet, grasshopper, not yet.
Here, heavens no. When I was in college, the other two things they talked about was smudge pots, where they would, like if you had a big citrus orchard or an apple orchard,
sure,
they would start these smudge pots all along and burn them to raise the temperature. Yeah. And then the other thing that I said is you can water early in the morning and that'll help warm them up and defrost them a little bit. You spray water on them. But anyway, we are way off topic because Easter's coming.
We are.
Easter's coming. And so I've been emptying eggshells really carefully so I can make my little egghead with the wheat germ hair.
Those were so stinking cute last year.
Well, they're going to be another part of this festivities this year. And actually my niece and her husband and their little 2-year-old won't make it up for Easter. So I sent them a kit with 4 of the eggs and I put the potting soil in it and I wrapped them in Saran and put them on. I cut the tray. So I had a little tray for it with some seeds and instructions. markers and extra coloring pages because I didn't think their two-year-old would. Anyway, I put at the top, I hope this doesn't arrive as just a bunch of eggshells and dirt that it got.
Exactly.
I packed it well enough. I think I did. Anyway, what about your garden?
Okay, let me look at my garden and see what I wrote, because I'll be honest, I don't remember what I wrote. And I wrote it like 20 minutes ago. Okay. Oh, I know. I ordered my tulips and more white daffodils from Eden Brothers today. I did that. They sent a coupon for 20% off. And so that was cool. And I did have to pay for them up front. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but that's okay. I mean, and Carol, I'm putting a line in the sand. That's all I'm ordering. I'm not going to do.
You know what they said? So a line in the sand? Yeah. So a wave washes up and the line is gone, Dee. Wind comes along and that line is gone. I do not believe for 1 second that you ordered your last bulb. Uh-uh. No.
Okay, just listen. I'm not going to force any narcissus inside anymore because I can't deal with the smell
right
now. So that's over with. So that saves me a ton of money. And I have so many daffodils now. And so all I'm trying to do is that daffodil project that's up on the hill. And I'm doing a few tulips in my kitchen border, and I only do a few. I think 75 total, and that's plenty because I can see them right out my window, looking at them right now, and they are beautiful. And then
wait a minute, let's back up.
I'm not.
So our listeners are going to like when they said you said I'm just going to plant a few tulips. They probably like thought 6, 12, and then you say a few is 75. Think big numbers with these bulbs, people. Big numbers for big displays.
It's not even a big display, but I bought 75. Anyway, and I did a totally different color combination.
Are you getting amaryllis?
Okay. Okay. I would probably grow an amaryllis.
Listeners, once
so
again,
there you go. I've already
Carol is
it.
Right. Go on with your update.
Whatever. Okay. And then I did some weeding a couple of days this week, and I did some more clearing, and I trimmed up some more roses and some other shrubs after they flowered. The lilac, the Chinese lilac is in full bloom. The Korean lilacs are waiting their sweet time because they're being smart. And I just wanted to say a note. At my doctor's suggestion, I have moved all of my garden coaching to Zoom, which is what I always did with out of town people anyway. Right. So I'm pretty good at it. And between the high pollen, perfume allergy issues, and people cooking in their homes, it just was too much for my system. So I'm just going to tell people up front, Zoom is quite effective because actually I enjoy it. I get more time to focus on what I want to tell people, and they send me photos. And then we can also FaceTime if they want to go outside and show me some more other stuff. They could do it on Zoom too, but people don't understand that. And then if I have a question, they'll walk me around the property. And then I also send them a follow-up email with drawings. See, if I see you in person, I just do the drawings there and give them to you. And all your notes are all you have. Well, my follow-up email comes to the Zoom meetings. So all of my current clients, they totally switched over and understood. I did have one new client that said, no, thank you. And I said, I completely understand because you know what? You should get what you
exactly.
want. So that's a change. And I just wanted to be sure and share it with people.
Okay.
So let's play favorites.
I think we have similar favorites, Dee.
We do. We have very similar favorites. You go first because
so
I just
jumped. Mine is, I looked out this morning and in spite of the cold, the daffodils look amazing. And I'm kind of surprised every year how many daffodils I have because I've been moving them around. But back by the vegetable garden, I've got two rows of them. One on each side of the gate. I have some up here by the house. I have some over in another area. I've got them on this. Anyway, the daffodils look great and the cold doesn't seem to bother them.
Yeah. I have, after 30 plus years of gardening out here, I have daffodils everywhere.
Exactly.
And it kind of reminds me of our friend Christopher, his mom's garden, Christopher in North Carolina.
Yes.
Yes. His mom. I remember walking around that beautiful garden and I was young then. And he said, don't ask her what they are because she doesn't remember. Well, I'm there now. I mean, some of them I know really well. I mean, Ice Follies is easy, you know. And anyway, so my favorite right now is my white daffodils in the kitchen border with the Phlox de Varicata, which is our native woodland phlox. There is not a prettier combo, and it will be in the newsletter, that photo. Also, one more thing. I did a little Instagram on, I think it was my story. And I did a little story where I talked about the daffodils and that area out front and how I planted them, how some of them burned up, how some of them are doing well, et cetera, et cetera. Somebody wrote in and said, what eats that? Oh, I know. I said in the video, I said, what eats daffodils? Absolutely nothing. Right.
I don't think anything does.
So somebody, nothing. Nobody eats daffodils. That's why you can have them anywhere. You know what I mean? And the deer won't eat them. The voles don't want them. Nobody wants them. So, I mean, they might get moved around by the moles, but not the vole. The voles won't eat them. So anyway, this person wrote me on Instagram. They DM'd me and they said, well, what eats tulips?
Everything.
And I laughed. That's exactly what I said. I said, everyone.
Rabbits, deer. In fact, so, I've got some tulips that I plant these hybrid tulips as annuals. I've got some out there and I thought, huh, that looks like somebody ate that little bud right off of there. I hate them, whoever they is.
I do too. I really do. So anyway, that's why I only put tulips right up by my door, because it kind of stops some of that stuff. And I'm not willing to do the things that my friend Teresa up in Coweta, Oklahoma, up by Tulsa. No, she puts them in baskets. I mean, the level of work she puts into her tulips. But let me just say, they are fabulous. Fabulous. Okay, that's my favorite.
All right.
And by the way, did I say that Eden Brothers is having a sale? And let me just say, we have an affiliate link at the bottom of our show notes and also at the bottom of our newsletter. And we get a percentage if you go to Eden Brothers and buy those. I'm just saying.
You are quite the temptress. I'm going to do a quote and we're going to talk about our flower topic.
Woo, look at that long quote you got to do. Go for it.
Once in those very early days, my brother brought into the nursery the lid of a biscuit tin, which he had covered with moss and garnished with twigs and flowers so as to make it a toy garden or a toy forest. That was the first beauty I ever knew. What the real garden had failed to do, the toy garden did. It made me aware of nature, not indeed as a storehouse of forms and colors, but as something cool, dewy, fresh, exuberant. As long as I live, my imagination of paradise will retain something of my brother's toy garden. And that is by C.S. Lewis, known to Jack by his friends and family.
I love, love, love that quote. I want to like write that on my heart.
I want to now get a biscuit tin, which is cookie tin. I want to take the lid and I want to make a little garden in the lid. Wouldn't that be sweet?
You could totally do that.
I'm going.
You should post it too.
I might. I'll see. I've got moss. I've got twigs. Would. I don't know if I can. Oh, I have flowers. I have little tiny flowers.
You have hellebores.
Hellebores would be too big.
Epimediums.
Oh, no. I'm thinking those little violets on the side of my house, if they're still blooming. Oh. I'm thinking pansies. I'm thinking, gosh, D, we'll see. It's the big week of getting everything ready for Easter. The last thing I need is a little project of putting a little garden on a top of a biscuit tin. But that is not our flower. Our flower.
No.
Go for it, D.
Our flower is Phlox paniculata Gina, and it is PPA's perennial of the year for 2024. So here's the thing about Gina. Gina came out a few years ago. It is a found selection. It was found somewhere. And it is supposed to provide more nectar for insects than other varieties because the florets are extremely small, and there are tons of them, okay? And we are actually linking to Phlox paniculata Gina at the Mount Cuba Center because it was reviewed. They did a whole thing on phlox. I grow Gina because it was given to me by American Beauties when Peggy Gregory.
Montgomery.
Is that right?
Peggy Montgomery.
Thank you. I couldn't get her last name out. Sorry, Peggy. I know you listen sometimes. When Peggy was involved with American Beauties, and she may still be, but I know that now she works for Garden Media Group because I had a long conversation with somebody the other day about different things. But anyway, Peggy was in charge of this and she brought all the bloggers, Gina, and I got two plants and I brought them home and it took them about 3 years to get going and they are extraordinarily beautiful. And then I bought more because I thought if it's good for pollinators, I want it. So here's the thing. I don't notice that pollinators go to Gina any more than they do to my pass-along phlox or to my phlox bright eyes. And I also grow John Fannock too. But I would say they go to, this is the order of which they like my, in my, just in my garden. And they're all planted in sun except John Fannock's in a little bit of shade. So that might be part of it. All right. So they go first to my pass-along, which is, I'm not going to say that word because we're going to talk about that in a minute. Then they go to bright eyes and then they go to Gina. That's just in my garden. It might be different in a different part of the country. So now will you talk about the next thing? Or are you going to talk about the phlox in your yard?
Well, I'll tell you about the phlox in my yard is I do not know that I have Gina. I have, I'm going to call it a pass along. It's just, you know, the purple pinkish color. And then I have the white one that's called David. I have that one. I will tell you that both of them,
I can't
get powdery mildew on them every single year, but they look ugly, but they come back.
You know, I think we have less trouble with powdery mildew in Oklahoma because we have wind all the time.
Right.
I think we get a lot of really good air circulation. Do not plant them in the shade, though. They will get mildew here, too. I mean, right at the end of the season, they start to look a little bad. I can't grow David. I've tried. I've killed it over and over and over again. It's pretty.
It is. It's white. And so, unlike you, Dee, I have not sat out there and observed where they're going, where the insects are going first, whether they're going to the pinkish purple pass along or whether they're going to David. I mean, they're just out there and they pop up and they're fairly low maintenance, I think. You know, they come up, they bloom.
I think so.
You let them go. They will self-sow a little bit, which is fine if they come up.
A little bit.
Not tons. But I did look up a couple of things, and you had pointed out that there's an article on Garden Rant that talks about there's no such thing as straight species, that even something like Phlox paniculata, a native wildflower, there's variation out there in nature, and what was found was a variation, which they said, oh, this one looks really, really good. We'll call it Gina, and then they asexually propagate it, so they're always getting that same Gina all the time. So people should be aware of that. And then the other thing is that, like I was saying, that if you're going to get one that is resistant to powdery mildew. I don't think with Phlox paniculata in my garden, it will ever be mildew-free, but there are certainly some that would be less susceptible to this powdery mildew, which literally turns the leaves almost white. It's so bad.
So I don't ever get that. But let me just point out that my pass along originally came from a friend named Katie Miller, who got it from another friend, who got it from a lady named Laura, who lived down in Louisiana. And mine is pinker than the purpley one. So mine is a very good example of that deal, the variation within nature.
Right.
And it's been a pass along for 35 years. So I know it's not a new variety. And I have given tons of it away too. And it does not get powdery mildew. I mean, I never see it, but I also have it in the sun. And I do have good air circulation. But I also have to think that because it came out of Louisiana, which is very humid, maybe that's why mine doesn't have trouble. I mean, I dig up big hunks of it and I stick it out by my mailbox. And then I put out the word and people come get it. Cool. So it's a great plant and I can't say enough nice things about it. It's a wonderful native plant, easy to grow, smells good. I don't have much luck with the newer ones and I've grown several of them. I have Cherry's Jubilee. I just remembered. I kind of hate it. It's short. I mean, it does okay, but it's short and it looks, nobody ever goes to it. So guess what? That's coming out this year because I have a whole new thing about my garden this year. We'll talk about that later.
Yes, we will. So the other thing I want to say about David, which you say you can't grow very well, it is white as white can be. And so it is great at night. It really, you can see it out there in the dark.
It glows.
It glows. And so if you are planting a white garden, or sometimes they call them moon gardens, and you're looking for a good white flower that blooms, I'm going to say mid to late summer through that period, you cannot go wrong with Phlox paniculata David if you can grow it.
Can we just start calling all white gardens moon gardens? Because I get tired of hearing about white gardens.
Okay, so we'll talk about moon gardens. I'm good with that.
I think that's a lovely
idea. It is a lovely idea when you think about the full moon out there. And so the other thing you said was grow them in full sun, good air circulation. And I don't think mine are getting, well, some of them are in full sun. Some of them are in an area that gets a little bit shadier every year. Air circulation, mm-hmm. I don't think it's as good here as it is in Oklahoma, but whatever.
Yeah, everywhere is different. And that's part of the gardening thing. It's even different where I live compared to people who live on the west side of Oklahoma City.
Yeah. But I will tell you this. Nobody ever wrote a song about the wind in Indiana like they wrote a song about the wind in Oklahoma.
Yeah. Two New Yorkers wrote that song. It's funny. I don't know how they knew, but they were right. Okay. You ready for the quote?
I am.
I have no advice for anybody except to, you know, be awake enough to see where you are at any given time and how that is beautiful and has poetry inside, even places you hate. Jeff Buckley.
Interesting.
I love our vegetable topic this week.
These are a few of our favorite things when it comes to vegetable gardening. And it's not about plants. It's about tools and amendments and stuff like that. So we'll start off with tools.
What's your favorite tool?
Well, first of all, I am the queen of tools. You know, I have that hoe collection and I have over 50 of them and I have hand tools galore. And I ordered one that less than pleased with it. I won't even talk about it. I ordered another one. It hasn't come yet because it's like this tool will be magic. I don't know. I just like to have the tools.
Oh, I love tools.
So I do love the Cobra Head Weeder. And we know the owners of Cobra Head, the lovely, lovely family up there in Wisconsin, American made. It's called Cobra Head because of the shape of the head. It looks like a cobra's head. Great for weeding.
It's great for getting Bermuda. Great for getting Bermuda out of sidewalks.
Oh, yeah. I use it to make rows in my garden. So when I'm planting a row across, I just do that. And then I also bought this, I don't know, it's called a long-handled raised bed cultivator from Gardener's Supply. We'll include a link. But one side of the head is a claw and you flip it over and the other side is just like a regular hoe head. And so that is good. You can reach all the way across the raised bed and just claw up the soil and then flip it over. You can smooth it out. So that those are two of hundreds of tools.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite?
Okay. So I really like hand tools. I like hand weeders. I don't like hoes. Because they hurt my back to hoe. And most of my stuff that I would hoe is in raised beds anyway. So I do like the Cobra Head. It's a great tool. But I have this cool, brutal Japanese weeder that I like too. And I got off of Amazon, I think. And somebody referred me to it. It is brutal. Like it would take your leg off if you're not careful. But it is great for getting stuff up out of the ground. And then, let's see. I also like the DeWitt Dutch hand hoe. And I like that it comes in right hand and left hand. So if you're left-handed, they have a hoe for you. And my sister and mother were both left-handed, and it drove them crazy that they couldn't find left-handed things. So that's another cool thing about it. So those are my favorites. And of course, I love these, which are my
Velco pruners. Yep.
I love my Velco pruners because they have a lot of strength with all these gears. So I love them. Very, very much. But I also really love the small hand pruners, the small micro shears, and Fiskars makes them, and so does Corona. They both make them. They're both great. So if you're just out there deadheading, those are perfect for that. And then if you really need to take stuff out, I use my Felcos. And those are probably the four tools I use the most, and gloves.
Now, this DeWitt Dutch hand hoe, I'm familiar with the Japanese hand digging hoe. It's not that, is it?
No, it's totally different. It's more of a triangle. That Japanese one I have has that big curve on it, and I'll link to both of them.
Okay. All right. Very good. Now we're going to talk about amendments. And so I don't usually put a bunch of amendments of any kind in my raised beds other than I get compost from my compost bins about every 2 years, and I will put that on my raised beds, but I don't generally go seek out any other amendments.
So I really only amend my vegetable garden at this point, or if I'm growing a rose, which is not really the vegetable category, although roses are an herb and they are in the apple family, I'll just say. So I don't know. I mean, I don't do a lot of it anymore. I use my own compost, and I used to use Happy Frogs It was called Soil Amendment, but it was compost. But it has bat guano in it, so I can't do that anymore. And I just put leaves on the beds at the end of the year, shredded leaves.
I should mention that. I didn't even think about that, but I put shredded leaves on the vegetable garden beds too. And sometimes I get 3 of 6 done, and sometimes I get more, but it just depends on when I get started and when I feel like bagging up the leaves as I mow. Because usually when I mow, I just leave the leaves on the ground, but sometimes I don't. But yeah, I do do that.
Yeah, I do too. But we, you know, I live in a forest, so I get so many leaves that first big, heavy leaf fall, I do go in and I shred some of them in the fall. I try not to do the spring leaf fall. I don't shred it. And I leave most of them in the garden beds, but I do mow over the ones on the little front lawn because they'll smother the fescue. So I do a mix of leave the leaves, don't leave the leaves, you know?
Right.
Anything else?
That is it. Let's talk about what our raised beds are made of.
Go ahead.
So I should go out and measure. So I got these, I'll call them concrete bricks. They're about 12 inches long. I think maybe 2 inches high, 4 inches wide. Mm-hmm. Don't quote me on that. Somewhere in that size.
Oh, wow.
And I have 2 high all the way around each bed. And they kind of get a little cattywampus, the top row, and I have to straighten them up every once in a while. But and when I had it done, I did pay these guys to lay out the beds and put these all nice and correct and cut where they needed to. So that is working out very, very well. They've been out there for 13 years. And
it's a long time.
They will. Well, they're concrete block, and they're fairly attractive, I think. And before that, I had cedar boards, and they all rotted, as they will do. They just will. So, anyway, that's what mine are made out of.
Okay, so I have 3 different things. So right now, I consider these small raised beds containers. So raised beds are just containers.
Yeah,
they're just bigger containers. So right now, I have the soft containers, but I'm getting ready to get rid of those. And because I'm tired of looking at them, and some of them burned partway in the fire. So I'm trying 2 of those Vigo beds, and no, I don't have an affiliate link. They want me to jump through way too many hoops for that. And then the other thing is I have cedar boards, and the cedar boards are actually my cut flower bed, but I could grow vegetables in them. And they are stacked. They're 2x6s stacked double high. And I do that so I can sit on the edge of them. And then my main potager, which is my main vegetable garden, it's also concrete blocks that are stained on the outside, not on the inside. And it has been it's been there since 2009. It's been very effective and very good. And I think there's just lots of ways to do it. And you make your raised beds out of anything you want to.
Yeah, my sister has raised beds. They made a concrete block, the kind that around here would be used to frame out a crawl space.
Right.
And so she made hers out of that. She's got 6 of them. They're not huge. And those thicker blocks, they take up a lot of space when you think about how wide they're, like 8 inches wide.
Yeah.
So
they do.
Anyway, the next question was, what kind of soil did we put in our raised beds? And I will say, when I first did my cedar board ones, that was when I first moved here 27 years ago. And so wow. I don't remember exactly, but I am sure that I had either soil, mushroom, mulch blend dropped on the driveway, and then I wheeled it all back there. But that's what I would tell people today is, if you can get it in bulk and you're willing to have it dumped on your driveway and then wheel it back to your raised beds, that is the cheapest way to do it, because when you start pricing bags of quote unquote raised bed soil that's been enriched with probably yucky compost stuff.
Some of it's just, let's talk about that for a minute. So some of the raised bed soils that are in bags are fine, and some of them aren't. And there's one in particular that I'm thinking of that really isn't good. And I'll have to think of a name in just a minute. I used it in one place and I was like, what is this stuff? When I opened it, it was Kellogg's, and it has a lot of bark in it. and not much of any core fiber or peat moss or anything else. And it was horrible. And so I had to mix a bunch of other stuff with it. So there are some others, but they're all really expensive.
Yeah. And so here there's a mulch place here called Indiana Mulch. And I'm assuming other mulch places have something similar, but they have something they call Mark's Mix, which is topsoil and mushroom compost mixed together. And you want something like that. You don't want pure topsoil. You want to have organic matter in it. Now, the other thing that my sister did, because her raised beds were rather deep, is they put rotted wood down in the bottom, which you can do. That's like hugel culture. But she noted that her raised beds are sinking. And I told her, I said, you'll have to add soil every year.
Yeah, you do. And you have to add a little bit of soil some years, even if you do it all soil all the way to the bottom. And I just want to point out that I'm not dissing on kugel culture. I've never done it. And I know people do it quite effectively, but I know that when they've done those tests about containers, they've shown that if it all has the same particulate matter in it all the way to the bottom, it drains better. Sure. And I have to think raised beds would be the same way, but that's just my personal thoughts. It is more expensive than doing hugel culture.
So you've got mentioned here something called Minic Materials Rich Mix?
Yeah, so back way, way back when I made my beds, Minic Materials they still have Rich Mix, and it's topsoil mixed with it probably has a little bit of compost in it, and it has manure. And that's what I did on all my raised beds because that's all they had. Now they have a garden mix that has more compost in it. I've heard mixed reviews about it, and I like the Minics just fine. And I've always bought from them. So I don't know. I've just heard from some people. I'm also hearing really good things about a company called Twisted Oak. It's brand new. Well, not real brand new, but relatively. And they're just off of I-35, just south of Waterloo. And there are huge mulch piles. And I just looked at their Facebook page. The thing you have to know about them is they don't take credit cards. And I don't know if they will I know they deliver to your house because Jennifer had some delivered to her. But several people have been going there and they have been really happy with their raised bed mix, whatever that is.
Very good. So the next question is, how do we keep our garden beds fertile? Dee, this is the point where we should say, well, every spring we do soil testing, we send it off to a lab, and they come back and tell us what nutrients are missing from our gardens. And then we source just those nutrients and put them in there. That's what everybody writes. And it's like, oh God, here's what I do, Dee. I rotate crops between the beds because different crops use different elements out of the ground and use nutrition differently. I try to make sure that legumes, which fix nitrogen in the soil, about every other year, each bed gets a legume, which would be peas or green beans. And if I think something's just like, well, you look like you're not doing very well, I'll go buy an organic fertilizer, one you can mix in water, and I'll give it a soak with that and say, good luck to you. That's my fertilizer plan. Yeah, how about yours, Dee?
I don't work at it that hard. I'm not a master gardener. Okay. But I do tell people to get soil tests, especially if they're just starting out, unless they're buying their soil, which is a different deal. So I top dress mine with my own compost, and I top dress them with leaves in the fall. So I top dress with compost in the spring, and if I have time. But the truth is, I'm usually rushed as I'll get out. So I run out there and I plant the seeds and I go on with my life. I used to buy Happy Frogs Amendment deal, or I used Back to Nature. Back to Nature is fine. It's just cottonseed holds, but you don't want to put it down right where you're going to put seeds because for some reason it inhibits seed germination. I know this because it's happened to me. The Happy Frog is fantastic stuff. It's not cheap, but it has bat guano. So I won't be using that this year. And actually, that's part of my rabbit hole. Anyway, keep going.
So the next question was
pest problems.
How do we manage pest problems? And the thing I tell people is
crop rotation.
Well, if you want vegetables that are laden with pesticides, you buy those at the grocery store. Why don't use those on your own garden? That's not the point. Anything that looks diseased, or, like squash, and I see the squash bugs on it, that goes into the trash, which the city of Indianapolis takes, and they take it to an incinerator, and they burn, baby, burn. So I try to keep my compost where it, because it doesn't really get hot enough to kill off diseases. So I keep disease stuff out of the compost bin. And then that's pretty much it.
Okay. So I was just going to say, you didn't say crop rotation, did you?
Yes. No, I didn't.
Oh, you did?
I think I did.
You did in the last part, but that's also key, as you wrote here. Don't grow things in the same place. So if you have three garden beds, which is one of my clients I just spoke to, I was like, when you put the tomatoes over here, the next year you move the tomatoes to the front bed. And then the second year you move the tomatoes to the middle bed. And that way you aren't growing things in the same spot year after year, because you don't want things like root knot nematodes or whatever.
Exactly.
So also row covers really help. But you'll have to uncover certain vegetables for pollination, like summer squash. And if you grow summer squash in my part of the world, you will have squash bugs because they're a nightmare. But that doesn't mean you can't grow it. I just go buy organic squash.
So I got something else to say about pest problems, and it's not really related to vegetable gardening, but it could be. But it is a public service announcement. So the dreaded Asian jumping worms are making their way from Wisconsin south. And so there's very big concern that you could get those infested in your garden, and they are very, very bad. And we'll link to an article about how they are very, very bad. And so one thing they said is, if you are taking pass along plants from somebody or even just buying plants, you should bare root them by washing off all the soil before you plant them in your garden, because you don't want to inadvertently add Asian jumping worms or their eggs to your garden. We'll put a link.
Gosh, I'm thinking maybe I want to not do that too.
I will put a link.
I know they're not here yet, but we have those hammerhead things.
I'm telling you,
it has gotten you.
I will put a link. And now I will do
a
quote.
Let's move on.
Yeah, on that somber note.
Gross.
The reading of all good books is like conversation with the finest people of the past centuries. Descartes. Descartes.
No, I put it in parentheses.
I see that now, but I never know. Descartes.
It's Descartes.
Well, Descartes for those of us in Indiana. All right. Bird-friendly gardening, guidance and projects for supporting birds in your landscape by Jen McGinnis. D, take it away.
Yes. Okay. So Carol didn't have time to read it yet. So I did. I sat down yesterday.
I looked at it this morning. Well, you sent me so many texts about it yesterday. Carol. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, you had to look at it, didn't you? Okay, so Jen, and we've known Jen forever. And I think of her as a good friend. But I'm going to say this. That's not why I love this book. This is one of the best books we've read in years. It's right up there with all of our other, you know, greatest hits. And I don't say that very often. And so it's fabulous. She started working on this book in 2021. It just came out, and her attention to detail and care shows. And I'm also just going to give a shout out to Jessica Walliser. She's the editor on this project, because I asked Jen and I said, I knew it, because there was lots of great information about insects, which Jen knows a lot about. And Jessica knows a lot about, because she's an entomologist. And I just loved it. So this is how it's laid out. In the first two sections, she gives you great information about birds, like everything you wanted to know about birds. What does it take to make birds happy? And one of the things it takes to make birds happy is insects.
Exactly.
And so if you don't use pesticides in your garden, if you can keep yourself from it, you help the food chain. And I'm just going to go for an aside just for a second. The Lone Star tick, people are very, very frightened about in Oklahoma, understandably so, and in Missouri, southern Missouri. So a lot of people are putting the granular insecticide on their lawns. I'm not judging them. I get why they're scared, but I am not doing that. I choose to wear the permethrin clothing to protect myself, because I care so much about the creatures that live in this garden. And while not very many things eat ticks, no matter what people tell you, because unfortunately, a lot of the animals that eat ticks are also hosts for the ticks.
Right.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like turkeys and things, chickens, guinea hens. The other part of that is if you can control the deer population in your area, the ticks will go away. That's part of it. But I also care deeply about the fact that when you spread that stuff, it kills everyone. So the worms in the soil, which who eats worms? Birds. Who eats caterpillars? Birds. And then who eats the little birds? Big birds. So that, I'm sorry if that sounded preachy, but Jen manages to talk about these things in the book and not seem preachy at all, but she's very direct. And then she deals with general projects like keeping birds from striking your windows, which is always a problem. She is not anti-bird feeder. She just wants you to plant native plants too. And she thinks that bird feeders are a great way to get people to look at birds up close. So that's kind of cool. So my point is, then there are more projects based on the size of your space and where you live. And I just thought the information was so spot on. The plant suggestions were spot on. And if you love birds, please buy this book.
Yeah, I was going to agree because I did look at it this morning because I thought, what is all the fuss about, Dee? It is a really good book.
Because Jen and I had a long conversation yesterday on Instagram. So, and that's what I was sending you. Anyway, keep going, Carol.
So I do like, she's got, all, like you said, different gardens for different size spaces or different projects that you can do. It's really nice because there's tons of great pictures. There's also some illustrations of what some gardens could look like that were planted for the birds.
Yeah.
It is a lovely book, Dee. That's all I'm going
to
say.
It is. It's a really lovely book. And you also said we should link to the National Garden Bureau's Attract Birds to Your Garden with the Homegrown Buffet. And we, you know, for one thing, we get ruby-throated hummingbirds. I think it's the ruby-throated ones in Oklahoma this time of year. It's pretty soon. And a lot of people put out bird feeders, and I don't put out a hummingbird feeder because I don't want to mess with ants and honeybees at it and all that stuff. But I grow a lot of plants for hummingbirds, and I wrote a whole post on it one time. And then there's also a great QR code in the book where you can go to the Audubon Society with your phone, and it asks for your zip code, and then it offers plants for your area. And I have almost every plant in my garden that it suggested.
Cool.
Which was really cool.
And then I was just going to say this. We have an affiliate link to Nature Hills Nursery, and Nature Hills has the Audubon plants. I forget exactly what they call them, but I don't want to say Audubon approved or Audubon recommended, but they have a bunch of native plants that are ones that would attract birds, and those are clearly marked. So that's another place you can go look. So
that is another place. And sometimes native plants can be hard to find. Like I had to look for a long time for a serviceberry, and I eventually ordered it from Nature Hills. It's not the least expensive place, but the plant came and it was fabulous, and it's just taken off.
Yeah, I think this is a marvelous book, and I like her. You had led me to the section about bird feeders, and she does not say, oh, don't have bird feeders. Bird feeders are terrible. But she tells you how to responsibly have bird feeders.
Just keep them clean.
Yeah. Because I'll tell you what, this book, we'll put it on the shelf. It'll be next to a lot of other very, very good books from Cool Springs Press. But yeah, that is Bird Friendly Gardening, Guidance and Projects for Supporting Birds in Your Landscape. This is sure to get me thinking about some different things because I already decided that my entire patio, all the plants I'm planting in my patio containers once the violas are done, I really want plants that are going to attract the hummingbirds. That's my goal.
Okay. Get yourself a coral honeysuckle. Those are native to the U.S. and they are much beloved by hummingbirds.
Okay. At your suggestion, Dee, somehow I will find that. And don't I need something for that to grow on?
Yes, you do. You need to tell us, but they are not rampant growers. They grow pretty, you know, they're pretty mannerly. And I have Major Wheeler and Dropmore Scarlet, and they're just amazing. A trellis.
Or an arbor. Well, I have some ideas that you have just given me, but I'm going to. Yeah. Anyway, okay. I said the book again. And it's lovely. Yeah. And this
time for a quote.
This one is a keeper, as we say.
Yeah, it is a keeper. It's a great book.
And let me just double check. When did the book come out? Because I want to. It's coming out April the 2nd, 2024.
I'm glad you looked because I got so excited about it. I didn't look.
So our listeners, hey, if you go out and pre-order this book on bookshop.org or Amazon. If you pre-order it, that'll push it up. Push it up, push it up, push it up. And that'll be a good thing.
Yeah, it'll help in front of sales.
Get it in front of more gardeners.
More eyes and more bird lovers. It's also written for people that are just bird watchers.
Exactly.
So you could turn bird watchers into gardeners. Wouldn't that be nice?
All right. Do the quote for Ready? Dirt.
A garden to walk in, an immensity to dream in. What more could he ask? A few flowers at his feet and above him the stars. That's Victor Hugo from Les Miserables.
And the dirt is, pansies have been named the newest Texas superstar. And this comes from the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service. And they're just singing the praises of pansies for people in Texas. That's the dirt.
Well, come on. Who sent that to you?
You did, Dee.
I did. I thought she'd get a kick out of it. So it's the newest Texas superstar. Go pansies. And you know what? Pansies are superstars. I mean, mine did really well this year, and I am loving all of them. They overwintered great, and I fed them for spring. I put some compost down, and they have just been happy little campers.
Now, I had a couple that overwintered not great, but they're still out there. And, you know, if I cleaned them up a little bit and
told them
that I love them, they might actually become something. But
I think they will.
And our friend Teresa Byington, didn't she send you another pansy that you were supposed to let me know about? What was that one called?
Oh, Frilly Skirts. That's a new one new to us.
Yeah.
It is so pretty. Let me make sure I told you that right.
Yeah. Yeah. Frilly Skirts. They don't have that up at the greenhouse. I don't. So then it wouldn't be cheating.
I bet you can get them to grow it.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be cheating if I went and found it somewhere else.
It's Flirty Skirts.
What'd you say before? Frilly? You said Frilly Skirts.
Frilly. I think
flirty,
it's flirty
Skirts. We'll have to look that up, because
I did look it up. That's what it says.
Okay.
But I'm not sure that's right. So anyway, sorry. I didn't know I was going to be put on the spot.
Anyway, anytime there's good news about pansies, we're going to shout it out in the dirt, right?
Sure, for you. We sure are.
All right.
You want to do the next quote?
We'll
go into rabbit holes. This is a long episode. We had a lot of info in it.
Daffodils that come before the swallow dares and take the winds of March with beauty. William Shakespeare. And they are certainly taking the winds of March with beauty today.
Yeah, we're supposed to have another big storm come through next week. So two more days of, you know, lows. So don't plan anything that you don't want to die. Okay, so my rabbit hole is that I am trying to find a rose fertilizer that is natural but doesn't have any manure or bone meal or blood meal. So I've been writing all of these producers and explaining what's going on, and they're all like, oh my gosh, we didn't think about that. And I'm like, why would you? I mean, it's always just been a side part of the industry that bone meal is usually from pork,
right?
I found out. And then blood meal is usually from beef. And then, of course, manure is usually from beef, although it can be from chicken. They don't use pork manure. So anyway, and I'm also looking for a good potting soil without any of these items either. And I may just have to stick with TLC's potting soil that's made in-house, because I bought this other potting soil, which did not say it had manure in it. But I walked outside the other day and I thought, and it had rained. And I thought to myself, why does it smell like a cattle truck is out here? And then I immediately became dizzy. And so I came back inside and got my mask, went back outside and started looking around. I thought, oh, it's that new potting soil. So I think I'm going to try to cover it up with bark in the pot to see if that will tamp down the smell. We'll see. Or I could cover it with stones in the something. I got to cover it with something, because I don't want to replant the whole rose. The rose is happy.
Yeah.
What do you think, Carol?
I think you should try to cover it with something. And I also think that the smell will dissipate quickly.
I do too. And that's really what my problem is, because I wear gloves. It's really about the smell. So I will be giving that potting soil away too. And then we'll go on from there. So you've got a lost lady.
The lost lady this week is B.B. Miles. She wrote a book about bulbs in 1963, but then she wrote another book. And at the moment, I know it starts with two B's. Hang on a second. I'll tell you what it's the book is called, which I found rather fascinating. It's Bluebells and Bittersweet, Gardening with Native American Plants, which everybody thinks that this is some new trend that we're all like, okay, we got to start using native plants. Beebe wrote the book in 1969. So everybody, you are not trendsetting. Beebe beat us all to it.
Yeah.
So of course I'm looking through it. And the next thing I know, did you know there's a native bleeding heart, Dee?
I don't think I did.
Dicentra eximia, E-X-I-M-I-A. And I looked and I can't really find it for sale online where I didn't have to buy like less than 32 of them. I found this one place. So I'm like, I want to try the native bleeding heart instead of the one from China. Why not?
Yeah, why not? Why not?
So you know? The book is just
the
full
one from
of
China doesn't even like it here. So
yeah, the book is full of great information and she's a fascinating person. And again, a bit of a mystery because on ancestry.com, there is no information after like 1940. And so I didn't even know if she had kids, except she mentions them on the back cover leaf of the book, the back flap. But anyway, and then Dee, did you notice on my blog, I've been writing seed packet poetry?
I did not. I've been reading your newsletter, but since you post almost every day.
Not every day.
On your blog, I have trouble keeping.
Not every day.
Even though I get it in my mailbox. I think we need to link to Beebe so that people will go to your Substack. And
I will link to Beebe in the show notes. Subscribe. Definitely.
Okay. Well, tell me about your poetry.
Seed packet poetry. I made it up. You're laughing?
Of course you did.
So here's what laughing. You do, Dee. You get some seed packets.
Laugh. Yeah, apparently.
You look at the descriptions and then you pull interesting phrases and things from the packet and you make a poem out of them.
Okay. And you think you don't have time to make a biscuit tin lid garden? You're making up poetry from seed packets.
Well, I can. Anyway, seed packet poetry. That is what I call it. I made a Canva graphic for it.
Oh, of course. Oh, I'll have to go look at this. That's funny.
You have got to go see. I will link to. I've done two now. So
good.
Anyway, let's talk about our garden commissions.
Okay.
So I'll go first.
You want me to go first?
I'm going first.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I think I'm going to mow the front yard for the first time this afternoon, get it all trimmed, not the back because all those crocuses and I still have Gloria the snow blooming. Crocuses are ripening. And then I need to finish setting up the patio for Easter because I'm having the big Easter egg hunt and we're actually doing it Saturday late afternoon because that seems to work better with everybody's schedules. Then it's not so rushed to go to church and then come to Aunt Carol's. They can come and enjoy. Do a little bit more weeding in my raised beds. I also definitely need to start pepper seeds inside. Time is getting away from us, Dee. And then weather permitting, I want to sow the lettuce and radishes, weather and time permitting, lettuce, radishes, and sweet peas. And what about your garden commission? Because now I'm like, oh my God, I have a lot to do.
I need to plant my tomato and pepper seeds. And so everybody is now going, what? You haven't planted them yet? I'm a little busy. Here's the thing about them. You can plant them this week and you're fine. It all depends on what kind of weather we have anyway. And we're supposed to be cold all next week and I'm not too worried about it. Okay. I need to weed out the heath aster in the lower back garden beds. I know that thing is a native, but gosh, it's so aggressive with those rhizotomous roots. And I think it's that one anyway. And then I also have another heath aster that flowers in lavender or it mixed with the white one, and it's not as aggressive. This one's terrible, like Rudbeckia goldsturm. And speaking of, I need to weed out more of the Rudbeckia goldsturm. I'm getting a handle on that. I can't believe it after 3 years of weeding the heck out of it. So I'm also going to do a little bit of work in my lower shade garden. Now, having said all that, we've got two storms coming through. So let's hope I get some of that done. That's all.
Okay, I'm going to do my eclipse. I'm going to do my eclipse.
It's time for the eclipse update.
So I did find another YouTube video of two guys talking about it. Now, there are some scripture references, but the other thing that they talked about is if the skies are clear and you know where to look, you're going to be able to see several different planets with the naked eye when the skies get dark. So that's going to be kind of interesting. So we are, let's see, today is the 21st, or is it, no, today's the 22nd. So we have 9 days, eight. We have, it'll be 2 weeks from Monday, this coming Monday. So when this episode comes out, the eclipse is less than 2 weeks away. So it's time to start looking at that extended forecast almost. Anyway, that's all I got.
I also saw something from a local, she's a naturalist and gardener, her name's Marcy Hawkins. She's up by Tulsa. And she shared something that I shared with you. And the most interesting part about it for me personally was she likes to stand under a tree and watch it in the shadow as it goes by so that she can see the play of the leaves too. And I thought that was very interesting.
Yes, that is the play, the wiggling shadows, they call it. That's very interesting. And that was one of the earlier YouTube videos I watched talked about, you know, like you take time to just watch the wiggling shadows, and it just had all these different things you should do. And I'm like, you could go crazy doing all that stuff. But
if you tried to do it all, you'd lose your mind. I will literally walk outside, stand under a tree if there are leaves.
There will be.
And go, wow, okay, that was cool in the end. All right. I don't even have glasses. All right. You want to finish this up?
You need to get you some glasses, Dee. They're everywhere.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Thank you for listening to The Garden Angelus. I hope you've hit that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode. We publish every week on Wednesdays at 12 a.m. Eastern Time.
If you listen to Apple Podcasts, we'd sure love a 5-star review. It helps push us up with the algorithm. That's the simple part of it. Could you also share it with your friends? Word of mouth is still the best way to get the word out there.
And be sure and check out our show notes for links for more information about today's topics, plus links to our own websites.
And subscribe to our Substack newsletter, The Garden Angelists at Substack.com, also linked to in our show notes. If you do, you'll get a link to listen to the podcast a day early.
And if you want to help support us, use those affiliate links. If you buy something after clicking through on them, we earn a small commission and it costs you nothing.
Or you can set up a monthly subscription through Buzzsprout or make a one-time donation through PayPal.
Thank you to everybody who has done so.
It helps us pay for the podcast hosting. It was lovely to chat with you all over the garden gate. Bye until next week.
Bye, everybody.